Good day, my friends, and welcome to the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast. Today's show is brought to you by Diadora, brand made legendary by Bjorn Borg, currently worn by world number 25, Jan-Lennard Struff, world number 42, Martina Trevisan. See them at Diadora.com. Use my code APPROVED in all caps at HollibertSports.com for 15% off of all Diadora performance tennis shoes. It's with great pleasure to announce that ScopeSports.io is the official fan club platform of the podcast. With Scope Fan Clubs, you can access premium behind-the-scenes content, chat with the athletes, put yourself in play for special giveaways. These guys are on the move, getting ready to announce more and more players on their platform. See them at scopesports.io to see what they are all about. He's a four-time major champion, a world number one, and remains the youngest male to reach the finals of all four majors. He is a former Davis Cup captain and a Hall of Famer. Since 2005, he's been a broadcaster for Australia Channel 9 and is here in Indian Wells with Tennis Channel. Jim Courier is today's guest, and this is the BNP Paribas Open Current Events Special. You were in Vegas for the Rafa
Netflix slam.
The Netflix. Mm-hmm. Then you did what?
Came home. And I came out here on Wednesday.
You flew or drove?
Flew.
You flew. Couple days home, mm-hmm. And now you're here.
Yeah.
How was the Netflix?
It was a very good event. They put on a really good event. Total pro.
Super A team. I watched that credit roll. It was a big time.
Yeah.
A-team.
No. Well, the guys who were they hired the guys who were running production hired the right people, and then they just kind of flushed it out from there. They didn't want to take any chances.
So you did a month and a half in Australia.
Yeah.
Back.
I come back in between.
Oh, that's right. You did.
I come back in between for 5 days.
Jimmy, when you retired, you didn't. You said something to me. You said, "I'm just getting going," because I remember saying, "Oh, you know, now that you retired, we got to do something." He's like, "Well, I'm just, you know, my career begins now."
Different career, yeah. That's right.
For our listeners, gentlemen, you hear, we are adjacent to court three bleachers. We are adjacent to Nobu. We are across the way from Nobu. We are on the patio of the Tennis Channel's offices. Gentlemen, you hear former world number one, the Hall of Famer, friend of the show, James Spencer Courier.
Shappy, always a pleasure to be with you. Our annual visit here on the deck, just outside Stadium One. And it's a beautiful day in the desert, a beautiful time to talk some tennis with you. Let's
hang on,
going.
Now tell the truth. Have you golfed? No.
I'm not.
No.
Since I've been in Indian Wells?
No.
I'm a working man.
No. Mm-mm. Listen, as you know, we do a five-set format. This is going to be truncated, but we're going to do the five, but it's going to be truncated. It's going to be different. First set is the off-the-court report. How was the EXO? How was
Vegas? How was Netflix Slam? I thought it was excellent for tennis because Netflix reaches a wide audience globally, right? About 250 million members, which means there's probably a billion people that have the password, you know.
Yeah.
And they put it on the front page of their site, and a lot of people are going to see it and stumble upon it and go, hey, look at these guys. And it's English and Spanish, right? They brought in Spanish language folks as well, so they broadcasted in two languages.
Nicolas Pereira was there. It was a big deal.
It did feel like a big deal. And Vegas makes things feel like a big deal. And it was sold out, high energy in the building.
Yeah.
And the guys wanted to put on a good show.
They
were a little bit compromised physically, but they still put on a really good show. They knew what they were doing.
I agree. It was a pay-per-view fight feeling as far as the A-team of the production went.
Yeah, look, the production was smooth. Bob Feller, who's run ESPN's trucks since I was a player, that's how long Bobby's been doing it, works with us at Tennis Channel as well as a producer. He was put in charge by Connor Schell's team, who were tasked by Netflix for that. And they just know how to get things on the air as smoothly as possible. And that when you're Netflix, you want to make sure that the stream goes out smoothly and that there are no real complaints. And they certainly did that. And, you know, Rafa and Carlos provided what they needed to do on the court, and then everyone else just kind of followed suit and got it up there.
They put on a good show.
Big time.
Do you have any feel if there's going to be more? Because it's kind of interesting that there's more tennis on other places.
I think this is going to fit that slot. If you remember when Jerry Solomon and Yvonne Lindell used to put on the event at Madison Square Garden, the Monday night prior to the starting of Indian Wells, this is probably the new version of that. I do believe that there's a big appetite for it at MGM, who produced it on site, on the ground, and provided the facilities. And I think Netflix, from what I'm hearing, had a good experience. And I know they're interested in more within sports in general. And I think that was a good entree into tennis for them.
This is the On the Court report, but I want to continue with Netflix. They announced the canceling of Breakpoint.
Yep.
They didn't get the cooperation of the big stars, which completely kneecapped them. I think it was like a combination of production and that. But what was your impressions of what happened there?
I think you nailed it on the head. I think that what happened, and if people go back and look at why the Formula One series Drive to Survive is and was so successful, it's that in the first season, they didn't get access to the big drivers. They had no access to the big teams. But after the first season, the big teams saw the value in being there. And teams like Ferrari and Mercedes are like, get in there. They're the board of directors like, you guys are missing out on huge free marketing opportunity. Now, what's interesting in tennis is you have so many different factions. And the majors, all the Grand Slam events, they were all in.
They
provided footage and access. They were incredible. The ATP and the WTA, incredible. But the independent contractor aspect of this made it difficult because you're right. The top players, it was tepid interest at best to give access. And without the big stars, you really have a hard time.
It was good. I mean, it had a lot of potential.
I think that ultimately my barometer is, do my friends that I know who don't know tennis very well, did they connect to it? And the answer is yes. I had a lot of friends who fell into it. Did you have the same situation?
I thought that the storylines and the intimate moments with the players, Ons and Isla and, you know, Felix at the French Open. I thought that there were a lot of poignant moments. There was things that I didn't know. They paid off stories that I was waiting for them to pay off, like Taylor Fritz being a young father. And I thought that it had like guts, just didn't have the big stars.
It's a force for good. Stories like that where they're able to expose tennis to a broader audience and to show the humanity of the players, I think is a real big selling point. And, you know, maybe there'll be another bite at the apple. Who knows? But, you know, at least two seasons of it take place and they're warehoused on Netflix and you can go watch them if you haven't seen them. And I would encourage you to do that.
We would be remiss to say, did not mention, though, that Zverev had an episode where they didn't mention any of his problems. And people seem to think that that was a little careless.
Well, look, if you're a producer, I think you've got to be aware of the big picture but you're also selling your product. And I think those of us within the sport understood that that was going to be challenging to present Sasha, given the plight that he's in right now, given that he has some legal issues that he still has to solve. And to not at least mention those, I think you're right. It was probably something bordering on negligence.
Let's get right into this tournament. This is really the nicest tournament in the world.
That's what I tell people. If you've never seen a tennis tournament and you want to see the best that tennis has, the majors are the majors, and they're always going to be special for what they are. But here, the vibe is just so right. The amount of space you have to get around. We're watching people just file out and mill around and it looks like they're having the best time. Honestly, this is like sitting up and watching people at Disneyland, just having the best day of their lives. It's a tennis extravaganza, and it has all the best players, just as you would get at the U.S. Open.
You know, the way you like premium concerts, the way you like premium sushi, this is premium from top to bottom.
But you also get great access. Yeah. They've been really a leader in the clubhouse as far as letting people know what court the players are practicing on. You can find that on the app. You can find that on the digital board here. So you can get up and close and watch the players at soundcheck, if we're going to use the concert analogy. You get to see them behind the scenes on that grass field where they're warming up. Like a lot of what they've done here has been incorporated by the majors in trying to find ways to match, you know, Larry and Ray and Tommy and everyone who works here's vision.
Premium.
Yeah, big time.
Rafa kicked off the tournament. I mean, the tournament kicked off very slowly. And, you know, Rafa leaving the tournament was, we had heard that he had hurt himself, kind of re-injured himself in Vegas chose not to report that, but that was a little bit of a, I think a lot of people were here to see him say goodbye.
Sure, it was disappointing. And let's tip the hat to the tournament for offering refunds for the fans who sold the stadium out on Thursday night. They'd announced in advance he was going to play Thursday. When he was replaced, they said, you know, disappointing, Rafa's out. If you'd like a refund, contact us. So good work by the tournament there. And just a shame for Rafa, shame for fans. We hope that we'll get a chance to see him play in North America in a tournament again. But if Netflix Slam was the last time we get to see him, at least there's that. And you can watch it on Netflix anytime you want.
Part of me wishes he would have retired when Roger said goodbye at Laver Cup. Just like shut the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, part of me did, yeah.
Yeah. I'm still holding out hope that he'll get one more run and we'll get one more ride with him.
Yeah.
But you just never know. He's gotten a lot more out of his body than I would have ever bet on when he started out.
Jim, I remember talking to you 20 years ago about him being you said you didn't think he could last.
Well,
I agreed with you.
He's the only one who's played with this much muscle on his joints that has made it this far. Like, you know, guys that put that much stress on their bodies typically don't last. And he's been an outlier in so many ways. And it's been just a marvel and a blessing to have a chance to watch him.
Do you have any feel for what happened to Rybakina?
I don't.
None. No.
You?
No. Francis Tiafoe is in like a low-key free fall. Do you have any information about what's happened? I mean, there was a change of agent, change of coach, and then he swapped racket paint jobs right before.
Yeah.
Confidence,
you know, confidence is king, right? And if you take your eye off the ball for a second and you lose some matches, you become more vulnerable in the eyes of the locker room. And I think that's a little bit of the story right now, is that the players feel like it's an opportunity to, when they play Francis, rather than a huge hurdle. And there's nothing that Francis it's nothing he can't stop. You know, he's healthy. That's the best news. If he just puts his nose down in the grindstone, does the work, follows the process, good things will happen. I understand it's a challenge. We have to recognize Francis's world has changed. He's gone from an up-and-coming player, someone who was a little bit under the radar, to a bona fide American superstar in the tennis world. And expectations change from his lens, also from the people watching him, and the responsibilities change. And that's an adjustment for all players to get used to being in the spotlight. And I think Francis will ultimately adjust and we'll see him turn it back the right way.
You think so?
I do.
Don't think he's maxed?
No. I think he's still got another gear.
Jess Pegula, same kind of situation. She's like really in a struggle zone. Is it that? You're shaking your head.
I mean, it's early in the season, right? I mean, I know that what puts that perspective that she's in a struggle zone is the fact that she's made a coaching change after, you know, a great amount of success with David Witt. But you could see, for her, this is a little bit of that Jannik Sinner moment, where Sinner was ranked very high in the world 2 Australian Opens ago, but lost in the quarterfinals and didn't like the way that felt, the way that he lost, and felt like he needed to shake things up. Now, he was a younger player. Jess is I think she's maybe even 30 now. I'm not exactly sure how old she is. So it's a slightly different place in her career, but I like the fact that she's willing to roll the dice, bring in some new voices, and try and see if she can break through where she is. Because where she is sort of like David Ferrer land. You know, you beat everybody you're supposed to beat, but it's harder to beat those players who have a little bit more firepower, and that's a little bit where she finds herself. So I wish her well. I love Jess. I'm a huge fan.
Hang on, but you know Knowles very well. Mm-hmm. Knowles is now on the team. Mm-hmm. Mark Merklin, the Bahamian, is on the team. What can you tell us about these guys, and what have you talked about with them?
Well, Knowlesy did a great job with Marty Fish at a similar stage in his career. He was Marty's coach that helped bring him into the top 10 for the first time in his career. So he has coaching experience. He's a wizened voice. He was a top doubles player. And also, importantly, Knowlesy is a guy who had his struggles controlling himself mentally. And it's I think, a good view for a coach to have experienced those challenges to be relatable to a player. And I don't know that Jess has any of those challenges. She seems much more even keeled, but you never know what's happening underneath the water. And ultimately, they're just getting started. So I know there's some things that they've worked on, like her slice backhand, trying to give her more options when she plays defense. I believe she spent a few days with Andy Roddick, like Coco Gauff did, to try and look at her serve and get a little bit of input in that department. So what I am very happy to hear for Jess is that she still thinks she can get better and she's willing to try. That's an awesome thing for an athlete to have at any age. It's required if you want to get the most out of yourself. So I think ultimately this will prove to be a good move for her. But let's fully give credit to the work that she and David Witt did together, because David really transformed her career during that COVID little COVID break when they went to work, and then she became a different player when she came back.
She got to three, right?
Legit, totally legit.
When you were Davis Cup captain, you were, I know that the players, your players were terrified to get a phone call from you, and you were not.
What? Terrified? They weren't happy to?
Man, I heard they were
calling us like, hey, let's go play.
I heard that you were tough on them and you didn't necessarily think that their work ethics were as...
Well, I'm honest. That's a different thing.
Hang on. So my question to you is this. What do you feel about the output you're seeing from the guys now? Tommy, Paul, Taylor, Fritz, this Francis, this crop of Americans, Korda. How are you feeling about their effort? You were one of the hardest workers of the sport. You changed the sport in a way from the work side of it. No one ever saw someone work like that. And now, what do you feel about their output?
I have to say that I'm as no longer the Davis Cup captain. It's been quite a few years now.
Yeah.
I'm not as in the weeds going to visit them and on the court with them as I once was during my days as captain. So I don't have all of the information, but I do talk to the coaches and talk to the players. And I feel like they're in a good place. Now, I could be wrong. I could be blinded by the light and not know everything. But, you know, I don't think Brad Stein's going to put up with any nonsense from Tommy Paul. You know, I look at who they have around them, Mike Russell and Paul Anacone. They're not going to mess around. Diego Moyano, who's now with Francis, is a big-time believer in the work. So if Francis works as hard as Diego, he's going to be in good shape eventually. So we'll see. I mean, I hope that they are. My fingers are crossed they are, because it's fleeting. You know, Shappy, you know, these careers, they go by in a flash. So you got to maximize what you can.
I think it was you who said you can't cheat the miles.
Can't. No, you can't fake it.
Novak being back here seems kind of fun.
It's really fun. It's hard to believe it's been since 2019 that he's been here. And the energy is great. And it's kind of been a constant. Him coming back to places where he hasn't been for a while, the U.S. Open last year, Australia, the amount of love that he's rightfully getting from the fans and the vibe around him, it's really good. And, you know, he's a guy who has craved it, understandably, and it's been a little bit of an up and down relationship with him and the audiences, but at this stage of his career, it feels like he's getting his due, and it's overdue.
He reminds me of Bernard Hopkins at the back end of his career, that he somehow now has, like, transcended, like, his body of work has,
yeah.
Even Sampras, in a way, like, the crowd all of a sudden is like, oh, wait a second, this guy has done something special,
really special, and yeah. It's still going. I'm calling his match here in about an hour and a half. He's going up tonight against Luca Nardi. And I, you know, always spend some time doing some research and trying to think of things that maybe the fans at home might not realize. And I came up with a good one that I'm sure other people have talked about it, but I haven't, and certainly not when I've been on the air at Tennis Channel. How about this? Since he's turned 35, Novak has a career Grand Slam. He's won each of the majors once. Since he turned 35.
What year did you retire?
I retired in 2000.
And how old were you?
I was 30. I mean, think about this. I mean, most players never, there's a very small group of players that ever get a career Grand Slam. He's done it since he's 35. It blows the mind.
Let's move into the third set. Now, normally this is the portion of the show where you talk about your career. We talk about it. We've done that. Yeah. We've done that. So I thought I would try something a little different. Mm. I want to talk about the schedule, your schedule. When you were a player, mm-hmm. what was your schedule?
as far as like
when you
tournaments?
come to this tournament.
I had a tournament.
You flew into Palm Springs. Where'd you stay?
Well, Palm Springs is an interesting example because a lot of my career I had an apartment here because I trained in Palm Springs with Jose Higuera.
Oh, that's right.
So I
Where'd you guys train? What course?
Mission Hills.
You did?
Yeah. So initially I stayed at the tournament hotel before I was working with Jose, which is the Grand Hyatt.
Yeah.
Which is just funny because I'm back there now like 35 years later. because that's where Tennis Channel, all of us are staying. And it's a great hotel, so close to these courts. But, bounced around over the years, stayed at La Quinta, rented houses. Yeah.
When you got to one, mm-hmm. where
I was at my apartment.
At your apartment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I had my car. It was great. It was a home game for me. It's awesome.
I remember you would come right off the plane and practice, break the sweat right out of the box. Sure. Did you work hard during tournaments or did you
No.
You took the foot off.
The work was done in between the tournaments. At tournaments was just massaging it and making sure that you were sharp, but fresh and ready.
And where did you eat?
There's a great Italian spot down the road right by 111 over by that mall. I can't remember the name of it. That was my go-to spot.
You had one spot.
That was my jam. I'd eat at John's for breakfast. You know, John's, it's right on 111 again. It's got like everything you want.
You would go out.
Yeah.
Keep your head down and go out.
Yeah. And you got to remember, it was a different time. This tournament was not men and women combined then. It was the women played the first week, the men played the second week. It was a much smaller footprint, much fewer fans were in, and tennis just wasn't as big then, even though it was big in America. This is a much bigger feel. It's tougher, I think, for the players these days to get out and about, because also you got to remember, things like Tennis Channel and the internet didn't exist, so every match is out there now for people to see. So if you're a true fan, you can see anything you want anytime.
And these kids are just muckling back Nobu. Heavy Nobu.
Well, you can do it in the player restaurant. They've got sushi there from Nobu.
Now, heavy Nobu all week?
I've had one. That'll probably be my only meal, but it was awesome. How about you?
No.
No, no can
it's
do.
It's too crazy in there, man. It's buck it's wild.
It's,
in there.
It's crazy. You got to go at the right time.
Hang on. So now, as a broadcaster, what's the schedule?
Broadcaster, the schedule is whatever Tennis Channel tells us to do. So my schedule, typically speaking, is I work afternoons and evenings. So today is a light schedule. This is the first day that I'm only working one match. So I'm on Djokovic-Nardi at 6 p.m. the night match. Usually, I have an afternoon match and then an evening match.
And then you do suite visits with Rolex. Are you still a Rolex?
I do some work with Rolex when I'm here, but it's a pretty low key thing.
Hang on a second. So you get to one in the world, you get the Rolex. You guarantee the Rolex contract?
I don't think anything's guaranteed. No. I think that all the brands look for people that fit what they're doing, and likewise, the players also look for. I heard Taylor Fritz talking about how he matched up with Hugo Boss, and then that kind of fit his lifestyle, and he likes all the clothes on and off the court, so it seemed good for him.
Your lifetime Rolex?
I've been with Rolex for, this is my second stint with them. I was with them as a player, and then now I'm with them as sort of a retired player ambassador.
How many Rolex do you have?
I have two.
Two?
Two. Yeah.
Come on.
My wife's got a few. My mom and sister have a few. I mean, I've been blessed.
Let's move into the four sets, the 10-ball scramble. I say
10
it.
10-ball scramble?
I say it. I say it. It goes fast.
I'm exhausted thinking about it.
Could you tell us anything that you've heard about this weekend's meetings? We know that there's been a big Saudi contingent here. The PIF is, they have a tent here. They've got a luxury box. They're everywhere on the banners. That is the Saudi fun. They're in the sport. What can you tell us about it?
I know as much as you do, Shappy. I'm not on the inside, so I'm learning about things probably from the same sources that you are. I think that overall my view is this. I think that we've seen how disruptive LIV Golf has been to the golf world. So I think tennis was wise to look to work with rather than against someone like the PIF, which has a different type of profit loss statement than a lot of other companies and corporations and funds. So I think if you can somehow find a way to work within the system, it's probably a safer move.
Let's talk about the strokes. Current players, your favorite forehand.
favorite forehand of a current player? Goodness, I mean, it might be the recency effect, but Cirundolo's forehand was phenomenal last night. I was watching him against Shelton. But, you know, the one that I would probably want right now, because it is battle-tested and does not fail under pressure, is going to surprise you. It's going to be Novak.
Novak doesn't really miss, does he?
Well, people, and I was one of those people, you overlook it because you focus on his backhand. I did for years. I focused on his backhand. I focused on his movement, his defense to offense. And then I started to dig into the numbers. And like anyone, the forehand's bigger and he finishes more with it. So the backhand is reliable. The forehand is lethal.
What about on the woman's side?
Is it Sabalenka?
Is it her forehand the best one?
I don't know. I probably would take Swiatek. I'd probably take Swiatek.
Iga rips, too.
Yeah.
Backhand.
Backhand, can't go away from Novak in the men's side. And the women's side, there's so many to choose from. I mean, do you go with Coco's? It's pretty darn good. She's got great defense on it, too.
Coco Gauff never misses that backhand, and she can absolutely lace it.
Who you got?
No, I think that Coco Gauff's backhand is great. Pagula doesn't miss her backhand either. No. It's amazing, kind of, huh?
She's got like that Lindsay Davenport flat backhand that's deep all the time. Yeah, it's money.
We talked about it in Australia for a second, but I love to watch Anisimova hit the ball. Her backhand is unbelievable, too. Your volleys, is there anyone out there that volleys like special?
Special volleys. We had a discussion about Rafa's volleys. Rafa's a great finisher at the net. Yeah, but Novak volleys last year, if you go back and watch tape
when he played
in
Alcaraz.
The Cincinnati match, Alcaraz, it was lights out. Alcaraz's great hands at the net as well. Yeah, there's a few.
Listen, this has been Courier Light. I want to get into a couple hard, tough button subjects here. Medical timeouts, how do you feel about them? Should they just be taken off the table?
If you remove medical timeouts, I think we'd find ourselves back in a Shuzo Matsuoka situation, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Shuzo Matsuoka, the Japanese player, had a situation where he cramped up badly at the U.S. Open, and at that point the rule was you could not touch a player while they were cramping, and he looked like a fish in a frying pan.
That was terrible.
And at that point, they changed the rule. So I think, can you imagine no medical timeouts and Sasha Zverev rips his ankle three ways at Roland Garros against Rafa? No, you got to have medical timeouts. Let's be serious.
TUEs, therapeutic use exemptions. We're hearing a lot about guys popping Adderalls a little bit.
I'm a lot ignorant when it comes to what Adderall does for people, so I'd need more information to have a ruling on that. What do you think?
I know. I think guys are focusing in on. I think that
is it a concentration assistant?
I think it's helping players lock in just that little extra, but you know,
it's an illegal drug, but you can get a TUE for it.
Correct.
Yeah. Interesting. I'd have to do some research on that.
The reemergence of Andre. Andre's everywhere.
It's the best. I love Andre. It's great to have him back. You know, he's got that empty nest syndrome now. He's got a lot of free time on his hands, and tennis is better when Andre's in it.
Have you spoken to him?
Yeah, I was with him in Vegas for the event. It was great to have him be a part of it, and saw him in Australia. It's just fantastic.
Do you guys have a chat? Do you guys eat anything in Australia?
I didn't get a chance to. He was running and gunning, and I'm doing the same down there. But well, now it looks like we're going to get some more time together, which is super fun.
Is that right?
I mean, he's going to be around. I can't imagine he won't be at the U.S. Open. You know, I'm sure I'll see him there. There'll be a lot of opportunities for Andre if he wants him.
Any truth to the rumor that he's going to join Tennis Channel?
They better back the Brinks truck up. I don't know if we got that much money
at
Tennis
Channel. Yeah, that's what we're hearing.
You're hearing that?
Who's
your source?
I can't say.
Is JG the
I can't say.
Okay.
Where are you at with gambling in tennis?
Gambling is here in all sports, and I think that's a reality. It's a big part of the business. The streaming, the data streaming rights are a huge part of the tennis ecosystem right now, with all the tournaments selling those rights. And ultimately, I'm not a gambler. Not a gambler in anything, so it doesn't impact me one way or the other. I wouldn't be allowed to gamble anyway as a broadcaster, but I know that there is a stickiness to the subject. There is a stickiness to people who have wagers on sports. It keeps them watching. But ultimately, I know there are a lot of bad outcomes from people that gamble too. So it's a little bit like having an alcohol sponsor at your event, or a tobacco sponsor, or something like that. It's it's going to be hard to, I think, not have that as an option right now because it seems like it's pretty prevalent.
Let's move into the fifth and final set. This is the king of the court. If you could make a change in the sport with a swing of the racket without any aggravation, what would it be? We've done it before. What's on your mind? Anything interesting?
I really like where the sport is. I talk to a lot of folks and they ask, you know, what's wrong with tennis? And I say, well, what's wrong with tennis? It's making more money globally than it ever has. These big tournaments like Indian Wells, like the majors, are more and more powerful than they've ever been. Players are making tons of money. Tournaments are doing well. I think the sport is going fine. There's always, and here's one thing too. I know everyone's going to almost always jump to the schedule. Almost always going to jump to the tennis is too long and all that stuff. But I'll say this. Players seem to be handling it just fine. You look at players playing, players like Mannarino finding his career high ranking in his mid-30s. People were playing, I was playing senior tennis at that age. He's in the top 20 for the first time in his career. We don't have an overwhelming problem with players getting injured and their careers being truncated because of the schedule or because of all of this stuff. So there's a lot of people that are going to complain. I know that's human nature. I'm a human. I complain about a lot of stuff. But I also see things are actually going quite well for the sport. And I know there's a lot of turbulence underneath in the politics and change may be afoot. Who knows? You know, you hear the same things I hear and read the same things I read, I'm sure, about potential changes in the structures of the sport. But ultimately, right now, the sport has great players. It has a great ecosystem of tournaments that are thriving. It's the only major sport in the world that combines men and women. And you can see the results in these tournaments where the men and women play together are spectacular across the board. So, look, I don't know that there's a ton off the top that I would think about changing, but maybe I'm just too much of an optimist these days, Sheppy.
Hey, man, always a pleasure. The tournament is alive and amplified. So good. Does your energy pick up as it goes, or do you lose energy? Do you lose steam?
No, my energy picks up. That's kind of one of the little secret sauces at these tournaments, as you know, having been in the world as long as I have, is that, you know, you're obviously crescendoing towards the end of the tournament and there are fewer matches, so you get a little bit more breathing room. It's manic at the beginning of the tournament.
It's so crazy at the end.
You're like, that's it, there's only two matches.
Once you
on
get
Sunday.
The breather, it's useful.
Yeah, feels great.
Listen, always a pleasure. We've known each other a really long time. Can't thank you enough. Always great to see you. James Spencer Currier, you are released.
Craig Shapiro, entrepreneur and good buddy. Great to see you as always. Thanks for having me.
Huge thank you to Jim Currier and thank you to Diodora. Use my code APPROVED in all caps at HollibertSports.com for 15% off of all Diodora performance tennis shoes. Scope Sports IO is the official fan club platform of the podcast. See them at scopesports.io. Denzel edited the show. Our music is by Brian Senti. We'll be back next time with more of the most interesting voices in the sport. Until then, I'm Craig Shapiro, and you are released.